Okay, a couple of passages I'd like for us to read. Someone volunteer to read 1 Peter 3:15. Or you may know it by heart, I do, but someone like to read or quote 1 Peter 3:15. Also 2 Corinthians 10:5. What's that? Yes, yeah, 2 Corinthians 10:5. Lance, you want to read that in a minute?
2 Corinthians 10:5.
Yeah. Les, would you like to read 1 Peter 3:15, please? No, 1 Peter.
But in your hearts, set apart Christ as Lord. Always be prepared to give an answer to anyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. But do this with gentleness and respect.
Right. The word there in the Greek where it says give an answer, in some translation says give a defense. It's actually the Greek word apologia, from where we get the word apologetics. So this has to do with giving a defense for your faith. We're not talking about apologizing for our faith. Somebody says, why are we studying about apologetics? It has nothing to do with the word apology. It has everything to do with the word defense. We need to defend the Christian faith by providing evidence for the truth of the Bible and a defense for our Christian worldview, which is increasingly under attack. We're also told in 2 Corinthians 10 and verse 5. Lance, would you like to read that, please?
Destroying speculations and every lofty thing raised up against the knowledge of God, we are taking every thought captive to the obedience of Christ.
Okay, so we're told to know the truth well enough so that when you find that there are Satan's strongholds or speculations out there that are not truth, that we can cast them down, bringing every thought into the captivity of Jesus Christ. And boy, is that ever needed today. So sometimes when I ask people, why do you believe the Bible? Why do you believe in God? And sometimes people just say, well, I just have faith. Or I just know. I just feel it in my bones. I want to suggest that by itself is not a very good answer. Because simply believing in something by itself doesn't make it so. Our Muslim friends believe in the Quran and they believe in Allah and suicide bombing, some of them, that kind of thing. That doesn't make it so. People can believe that the earth is flat. That doesn't make it so. Truth is truth whether you believe it or not. And the earth is round whether you believe it or not. So sometimes we confuse, I think, faith in the sense of faith in, trusting in the Lord. And what we need to do in order to defend, based on evidence, the existence of God, the existence of truth, and the truth of the Bible. And that's primarily what's involved in apologetics. This is not some walk in the dark. It is a walk in the light. Remember, we're told to love the Lord our God with all our hearts, souls, and minds. So this is an intellectually defensible gospel. And we need to understand that if a person, like Isaiah said, you know, come let us reason together. If a person has an open mind and willing to reason based on the evidence, they should be able to see beyond a reasonable doubt, not something that is, you know, proven like in a test tube, but beyond a reasonable doubt that, yes, the following four questions are true. By the way, this material primarily comes from a book I'd recommend to you called I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist. It's a it's a clever title and some great material in there. And if anybody is really serious about sorting out all these questions, this is a great resource. And this little series that I've been looking through, that we're going to deal with the first one tonight, deals with these basic four questions, and each one builds on the next. First of all, does truth exist? You know, we live in a day of postmodernism, where basically we're told in so many circles that everything's relative. So is that true? does truth really exist? And if truth exists, then I need to try to find it. So does God exist? And if God exists, are miracles possible? Because the Bible is filled with miracles, right? So if miracles aren't possible, then the Bible can't be true. And the New Testament can't be true. But if miracles are possible, and God exists, and truth exists, then the next question is the New Testament and the documents found therein reliable historical testimony that I can put my faith in and show evidence that it's from this God that I believe exists or that it is inspired? So I think that's an important kind of sequence of events that we need to grasp and understand. Knowing the answers to these four questions sets the foundation for our entire life, right? How we think, how we act, how we make choices certainly determines our worldview. And how many take the time to search out the real answers to these soul-searching questions for themselves? Since these answers have temporal and eternal consequences, wow, we need to really take these questions and their answers very, very seriously. So let me begin, before we get into this first lesson on does truth exist, by just asking the question, why is it that so many people reject truth? Let's look at a couple of verses. Somebody have 2 Thessalonians 2 and verse 11. And then somebody else needs to turn to Romans 1, 18 through 23. I'll be turning to the passage in Romans as well. This passage in 2 Thessalonians has always interested me. 2 Thessalonians 2, 11. Yeah, I think the King James says a strong delusion that they might believe a lie. Wow. And the reason why someone might be allowed to believe lies is because they don't really love the truth. They don't really want the truth, and so God allows them to be deceived. Yes, Jim.
Isn't it easier to live without any rules, without any standards?
Yeah, it is. Augustine said this. He said, we love the truth when it enlightens us, but we hate it when it convicts us of wrongdoing. And that's probably true for all of us at different times, right? You know, sometimes the truth hurts, but we need to love the truth in order to respond to it appropriately. I'd like to suggest that there are two questions to ask people who maybe tend to be rather critical or argue about Christianity. The first one is simple. If I were to ask you a serious question, will you give me a brutally honest answer? And then if they say yes, you say, if Christianity is true, and I could show you that intellectually Christianity is defensible and true, and the most reasonable belief system out there, would you become a Christian? And if the person has any hesitancy to that, you know, the answer to that question, you're probably not dealing with a good and honest heart. You're probably dealing with somebody who their objections are not just intellectual, though they may claim that they're intellectual. Because if you say, if we can get rid of all your intellectual obstacles, you know, would you then turn around and follow the Lord? If they're not sure or they're hesitant or still say no, pray for those people, be nice with them, but you're probably casting your pearls before swine. I mean, what we want is people that if they can be open-minded enough to consider the evidence, and if they are convinced, they, yes, of course, if I could be convinced that it is true, I will respond to truth. That's what we're looking for when we talk about this subject. So some people don't respond to the truth, can't ever see it, because deep down in their hearts, they don't love the truth and they just want to do their own thing. In fact, what did Romans chapter 1, what did Paul say about the reasons why some people would reject truth. Fascinating text here, Romans 1, 18 through 23. Someone with a loud voice have that text? Yes, Adam. Romans 1, 18 through 23.
Since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes, his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly seen, being understood through what has been made, so that they are without excuse. For even though they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks, but they became futile in their speculations, for their foolish heart was darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools, and exchange the glory of the incorruptible God for an image in the form of a corruptible man and of birds and four-footed animals and crawling creatures.
Good job, Adam. So, there's enough evidence out there. You know, got all these PhDs, all these really smart people out there claiming that, you know, they know better. And yet the Bible says you can just look up to the creation and folks who claim that that just came about by accident? Really? They're without excuse. There's just overwhelming evidence. Yes, Brad.
I know that as you present this, you're presenting it in a way that, you know, we can become better at defending.
Yes.
Right? This concept that this truth exists is also very relevant today for Christians in their personal life, because I like to think of it as a forest. God's truth is a forest.
Okay.
Lots of truth. There's only one source of it, and that's him.
Right.
But the world bombards us with the notion that truth is relative.
Yes.
What's true today isn't necessarily what was true yesterday, or what was true yesterday isn't necessarily relevant today. And the world is full of that. And it creeps in to us as well.
Yes, it does. It's the mantra of the culture.
There are certain trees that get cut down.
Yes. And we're going to present this in a way that hopefully will help us to answer folks who've bought into this idea of postmodernism. And I think this is put together really well, and I think it makes a lot of sense. So in Romans 1, people reject truth sometimes because they just exchange the truth of God for a lie, because they've given themselves over to their sinful desires, and they choose to worship things that have been created rather than the Creator, and they did not think it worthwhile to retain the knowledge of God. So they reject him, and God then leaves them or gives them over to a depraved mind. It's really sad. So it's nothing new under the sun. That's happening all around us, and it was happening during Paul's day as well. So as Brad alluded to, why does all this matter? Because obviously, if everything's relative and truth doesn't really exist, then studying the Bible is nonsensical. I mean, if there's no truth and the Bible claims there is truth, then the Bible is wrong. So we have to really think this through and understand how to answer our culture, which is basically saying that there is no truth. You know, Richard Dawkins has written this book, The God Delusion. And if it's true that there's no truth, then Dawkins' book can't be true either if there's no truth, right? I mean, what, you know, proves too much proves nothing. But these guys, on the one hand, are saying this is the truth, and on the other hand, they're saying there's no such thing as truth, which, of course, is self-contradictory. So let's begin our discussion about what is truth. And whenever we talk about truth, of course, the first person that comes to your mind is Jack Nicholson, right?
Yep.
Tom Cruise had Jack Nicholson on the witness stand, and he said, "Colonel, I want the truth." And Jack Nicholson responds, "You can't handle the truth." And truth of the matter is, there's a whole lot of people out there who can't seem to handle the truth. But we need to lovingly do our best to proclaim it. So I'm mindful of Jesus who stood before Pilate and he tells Pilate, no, I'm the king of truth. And Pilate says, what is truth? I kind of get the impression from John 18, 37 and 38 that this was probably a sarcastic response because the Roman pagans sort of had this subjective idea of truth as well. So Jesus says, I am the truth and the truth shall set you free. And what we need to understand is that one little simple definition of truth is it's just telling it like it is. It's telling things as they correspond to reality so that you can reason together with a common objective basis. And truth is telling it like it is. If I told you this was a Bible I've had since the eighth grade, and it's an American Standard Bible, then that's a truthful statement. That's what it is. If I told you this was a Koran, obviously that's not truth. To say that there's no such thing as truth is just absurd on its face. And truth always pertains to its referent, to the point that it is directing us. And sometimes when you talk about this kind of thing, people go, well, of course. I mean, this seems so obvious. Why are you even bothering with this, Brother Hunter? Well, the first thing we need to do to a culture that's gone mad is basically state the obvious. And a lot of these things are just obvious things that correspond to reality. And we need to think, for example, in terms of certain religious claims. An Oxford professor, John Lennox, debated Richard Dawkins several years ago, also from Oxford. And the Oxford professor said, God exists. And Richard Dawkins proclaims, no, he's just a delusion. He's just your imaginary friend. And the point is, just on its face, it's the law of non-contradiction. They can't both be right, can they? I mean, either God exists or he doesn't. This idea that you both can be right, they both could be true, on its face is contradictory. Now, the one that's right is Dr. Lennox. By the way, if you go to crossexamine.com, you can listen to the audio of their debate they had. And it appears to me that Dr. Lennox really got the better of Dr. Dawkins. And it's interesting that after that debate, he's refused to debate any more theists. Do you know that creationists almost always win debates when you ask the audience to afterwards talk about who do you think made the most sense? And so they just try to shut down discussion and don't want to have reasonable debates anymore because they lose. And I just think that's fascinating. Yes, Les.
I was just thinking the very first slide you had up there, I think it's at crossexamine.org.
Yes, correct.
But you just said .com.
Oh, okay. It may be .org. Let me double check here. I don't see it here. Anyway, if you go to, just put cross-examined in your, I actually have an app now. I've been listening to some of this stuff on my walks. It's very good material. So this law of non-contradiction helps us to discover what's false. And it's this basic idea that opposite ideas cannot both be true at the same time and in the same sense. For example, somebody says the earth is round. Somebody else says the earth is not round, the earth is flat. Well, obviously they can't both be true. You've got to make up your mind. Either one of the others of these is true, or maybe there's a third alternative, but both of these can't be true at the same time. And understanding how to apply this law of non-contradiction, which is just undeniable, even to those who deny it, they find themselves using it, is one of your key tools to help you deal with postmodernists and folks who constantly are claiming certain things that basically make them not responsible to anything because they try to explain away the whole idea of truth. For example, maybe you're having a discussion with somebody and somebody says, well, I don't believe in the law of self non-contradiction. And you say, yes, you do. And he says, no, I don't. He says, yes, you do. And he says, no, I don't. And he says, well, yes, you do, because you've been contradicting me. So you have to agree with this because you just got involved in this whole idea of contradiction. The idea that there is certain truths that are self-evident is really important. It's one of the most fundamental laws of thought. It is to thinking what eyes are to seeing. We can't see without our eyes, and we can't determine in any kind of logical sequence what is true and what is false without just assuming this self-evident truth of the law of non-contradiction. There was a fascinating Muslim philosopher who said this when people were trying to argue that they didn't believe in this. He says, anyone who denies the law of non-contradiction should be beaten and burned until he admits that to be beaten is not the same as not to be beaten, and to be burned is not the same as not to be burned. I'll leave it to a Muslim to come up with something like that. That's not a Christian tactic, but he's absolutely right. I mean, it is just absurd on its face. And so most anti-Christian philosophies that are prevalent today violate this principle. And so the moral of this quote is that it's self-defeating to deny the law of self-contradiction. To deny it is to use it. So I think we need to contend that all truth, if it's really truth, is absolute. And it is true for all persons, at all times, in all places. I mean, if gravity is true, all persons at all times and all places are subject to the law of gravity. And even if somebody doesn't believe in the law of gravity, it doesn't make it suddenly not exist. And so there are really no relative truths. Somebody says, well, sure, it's warm at the equator and it's cold up in the Arctic. Well, truth is telling it what it is. And for people at the equator, it's warm, and for people in the Arctic, it's cold. It's not in any way relative, because if you were to move to the Arctic, you'd be cold, and if you move down to the equator, you'd be warm. That doesn't prove anything. So what are some of the objections to absolute truth today? We hear this all the time, as Brad was talking about. Very common, there is no truth. Everything is subjective. And then, even if there were truth, well, you can't really know truth. And all truth is relative. It's true for you, but not for me. Christianity is true for you, but Buddhism is true for me. And who are you to tell me that you're right and I'm mistaken? No one really has the truth, you ignorant, arrogant Christian, you. And you ought not to judge anyway. So what are we even discussing this subject for anyway? So your greatest tool in answering postmodernism is to just apply the claim to itself and show that it is self-contradictory. I think half of your ability in defending the truth has to do with understanding this principle and learning how to use it. And I just find this just kind of fun just to discuss and to talk about. If someone were to say, I can't speak a word in English, you got a problem with that? Someone walks in and says, I can't speak a word of English. Why is that on its face self-defeating and self-contradictory? Didn't he just say that in English? Somehow or other, that doesn't quite follow. There are no sentences in the English language longer than 3 words. Well, I just gave you a sentence much longer than 3 words, so it is self-contradictory. My parents had no kids that lived. That can't be true. My mother, or my brother is an only child. Or everything I say is a lie. Maybe. Well, if that's true, then is that a lie? Is that, if it's a lie, then maybe it's true. I mean, all generalizations are false. Isn't that a generalization? And so a lot of these things, you just kind of turn it on itself, and it will help people to recognize the fallacy. Remember, Satan is the deceiver, and these things and these claims are all bogus, and we've got to show people that they're just not something that has any foundation behind it. When I was a kid, I used to watch The Roadrunner. Anybody else watch any Roadrunner episodes? Willie Coyote, and he was always trying to chase the Roadrunner, and the Roadrunner was always faster and smarter than the poor coyote. And in one episode, you know, he's chasing the Roadrunner, and then the Roadrunner runs and jumps over this ravine. And then suddenly the coyote realizes that he has no foundation underneath him. And then he just crashes down to the bottom. Now, he's killed about 10 times in every cartoon, and then he gets up the next scene and he's fine. I've never figured that one out. But the point is, if you can say things to a person, oftentimes who are really sort of, you know, arrogant about this, you know, and just point out something that will show them that they have no ground underneath them, then you look like a genius, and you wind up sort of having this person wind up with, like the coyote, the bottom of the ravine, without anything really that they can say further, because the person making the claim has no ground to stand on. So somebody says, there is no truth. How do you turn that on itself? What would you say to somebody the next time you hear somebody say, there is no truth? Is that true? Well, I mean, they're stating the truth, supposedly, while they're saying there is no truth. It is self-contradictory, self-defeating. They're making a truth claim while they're claiming there is no such thing. See why we call that the roadrunner tactic? He's just suddenly, there's no ground underneath them. And again, you look a little bit like a genius when you do that. All right, there is no such thing as absolute truth. Okay, are you absolutely sure about that? Okay, if that's true, then the statement that you just made can't be true. It's amazing how many people make these kind of statements. Teachers to children make these kind of statements, and they sound reasonable when they are false, you know, just on their face. How about this? This is very common. Well, that may be true for you, but it's not true for me. So, that may be true for you, but it's not true for me. So, how would you turn that on its face? How about, is that true for everybody? I mean, this general statement, what's true for you is not true for me. But if it's true for you, but not for me, it can't be true for everybody, because that on its face violates the whole idea that everybody can agree on something. You know, is that the way the real world works in any other setting? You know, you're speeding on the interstate and the police officer pulls you over and says, hey, you're going 90 and a 55 and man, are you in trouble? And you just say, well, that may be true for you, but it's not true for me. So I'll see you later. I mean, does that get you out of a ticket? Can you pull that off before a judge and have anybody with any reason think that that makes sense? And yet we're talking about the most important spiritual questions that have to do with eternity, and we want to use this kind of ridiculous reasoning in connection with that. There is no truth in anything but science. So how would you turn that on its head? Well, is that a scientific truth? I mean, you can prove certain things through science, like E equals MC squared. You can prove that water is made out of H2O. But when you're talking about matters of morality and truth, that's a philosophical statement. That's not a scientific statement. Can you go into a laboratory and prove that there is no truth in anything but science? See, there are some things that are not scientifically verifiable. I mean, most everybody would agree that it's wrong to torture little kids just for fun, right? How do you prove that scientifically? You know, it was Einstein who made the comment, a man of science is a poor philosopher. And yet, all these PhDs, what's in the front of the word PhD? What does P stand for? Philosophy. It's a recognition that in all these sciences, you have some interpretation of data. You have some philosophy involved. When you study the fossil records, and you pull up some old fossil, it doesn't have etched on it, put here by Yahweh. Created by Yahweh. This was put here during the Great Flood. And it also doesn't say this came about over millions and millions of years over a process known as general evolution, where a little amoeba eventually turned into a human being. Science doesn't prove that. Science just has to extrapolate data and come up with theories. And so this whole idea that, oh, the only truth comes from science. Science interprets data, and scientists change their mind and come up with different ideas, different ways to look at data all the time. Especially when you're dealing with moral issues about which science is just ethically neutral. Let me talk to you about a guy by the name of Immanuel Kant. He lived from 1724 to 1804, and he was a British philosopher, and he had an extremely significant impact on Western thought. And he basically said that there's no way you can really know the real world because all we can do is evaluate what we see around us based upon our senses. And so we don't really see the real world. We see the perception, our perception of the real world. So we can't really know what the real world really is. And so the idea then is truth's relative, based on different people's perceptions. That's really impacted a lot of our modern day thinking, is this fellow Immanuel Kant, who said, you can't know anything about the world. Now, how would you turn that around? He's so sure you can't know anything about the real world, and yet is he not making a statement about the real world? Then how do you know what you're saying about the real world? If we can't know, then how can you be so dogmatic about what you think you know? Truth of the matter is, the laws of logic and reason can help us to determine truth. We're back to this debate. And who's right? Everyone can listen and see the evidence, and if they have a good and honest heart, come to the proper conclusion. And everybody ought to be able to understand that they can't both be right, and we have to make a choice. The other thing we need to understand is something known as the law of the excluded middle. And that is, in logic, in this case, God either exists or he does not. There is no middle alternative. You can't have half a God or there's no, it's an either or. Some things are either or propositions. And that is certainly true with the most important theological issue that we have. And that is, are we going to be believers in God, theist, or are we going to be atheist? Modern skeptics love to say, you should doubt everything. What's a good answer back to that? Yeah. Should I doubt that? Isn't it interesting that the modern day skeptics are skeptical of everything but their own skepticism? Anybody ever have any doubts about certain aspects of their faith? Well, most of the time when people experience doubts, it's more based upon their own emotions and their own experiences at the time. The evidence doesn't change. God doesn't change. It's our emotions that change. And the more you can doubt your doubts, the more you're likely to examine. And Jesus said, seek and ye shall find. One guy said, You know, I'm a theist and I've studied this for years, but sometimes when I get up in the morning really early, I'm an atheist until I have my first cup of coffee. In other words, it's kind of like, whoa, you know, sometimes our emotions impact us in ways that cause us to doubt. But the evidence doesn't change. So we have our right to our own feelings, our own opinions, but not to our own facts. Yes, Peter.
I think to that question, the person answered that way, the guy asking should say, yes, that's correct.
Okay.
He should doubt.
And he needs to doubt his atheism and his ideas about relativism. And let's go ahead and look at all of these things objectively. Yes, Mariana. Correct.
That's what you run up against, because as soon as you put a question to them, you know, it's either one or the other. Well, I just don't want to.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about politics or religion. And there you go back to the idea of, you know, you have to look for somebody who really loves truth and who takes life seriously and wants to figure out the right answer to these profound questions. And how about this extremely common one? You know, it used to be John 3:16 was the verse everybody knows. Now it's Matthew 7, verses 1 and following, which is, thou shalt not judge. And of course, you know, we'll talk in a minute about what Jesus said about that, but how would you turn that on its head? Yes, isn't that a judgment? I mean, everybody's got to make judgments. Atheists make judgments. And so people just need to understand that Jesus wasn't teaching against judgment. He was telling us how to judge righteously. Remember John 7, verse 24, he says, judge righteous judgment, not according to appearances. He says, if you've got the same problem in your life, take care of that first before you talk to somebody else about that problem in theirs. But to use that verse out of context and act like you can't make any kind of judgments or say that something that someone is doing is morally incorrect based on the scriptures is, you know, they're being judgmental and they're just trying to silence discussion and any kind of debate, which of course is unfortunate to say the least. So, the truth about truth, back to Jack Nicholson, right? Contrary beliefs are possible, of course, but contrary truths are not possible. One person may say that's a square and another person may say it's a circle, but you can't be both a square and a circle at the same time. And by the way, there's all this craziness about people just self-identifying in a certain gender. And you know, you can biologically examine yourself if you choose and determine what the facts are. And your feelings don't change whether you're male or female. But this postmodernism has led to that kind of craziness out there. I heard something this morning about an interview they did at the University of Washington. And this fellow who was white and 5'9", went around and started asking some of the students, what would you think if I identified as a woman? And they pretty much said, oh, well, if you want to be a woman, be my guest. That's fine. Do you believe me when I say I'm a woman? And they go, well, sure. If you tell me you're a woman, that's fine. And then he'd go on and he'd say, what if I told you that I was a 6'5 Chinaman? They go, well, good for you. If that's what you think. He goes, but am I right? Well, you're telling me you are. You ought to know. I mean, he just went on and on with all these absurd things. And regardless of how far out he went, most of those students were willing to accept their own self-identity with whatever it is. And it's because they're just believing, not their eyes right in front of them, but that somebody has the right to say anything they want about what they think they are or want to be, and they shouldn't be judgmental. So that's how crazy this world is getting. So how are you supposed to talk to people about the scriptures and about the pattern for the church when they can't even figure out that a 5'9 Caucasian fella is not a 6-foot China woman? So it's difficult. You can believe everything is true, but everything can't be true because the earth, again, can't be both flat and round at the same time. Objective truth can't be denied without being affirmed, because you have to respond to some sort of truth in order to even make the claim. And so sometimes thinking about these things kind of almost makes your head hurt. It's like, what? Yeah. But that's what happens when you wind up with this kind of confusion. So we've established there is truth. Now we need to see what is the truth about God. And if the Bible is true, how should this impact a person's life? If you understand there is truth, then wow, you need to wrap your arms around it and stand on the foundation of truth. And then you can do so with confidence. Because if nothing is true, then everything's irrelevant, right? If no God exists, life is meaningless. There's no design and purpose. Everything's just an accident. And the good part for folks who just want to do what they want to do is, who are you to tell me what to do? We're just all here because of some bizarre roll of the dice. And of course, there's no afterlife. So if some different God exists than the God of the Bible, if that were true, then you need to be subject to his teachings, if such a thing exists. So I found this material really thoughtful and something that will help us in this, you know, postmodernistic age. And it's really sad, but this is the sort of thing that is just promoted and accepted as almost some absolute truth that no one can possibly argue with in our school systems. And you wonder why so many people are losing their faith. They don't even believe that truth is possible. So, what a surprise. We're actually 7:45. You guys want to talk about any of this? Any thoughts or discussions about what we went through today? Yes.
I like what 1 Corinthians 1:18 says. For the word of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, but to us who are being saved is the power of God.
Yes. Foolishness to people of the world.
Yes.
But it's the truth, and it's the power that make a difference. Yes, Brad.
It's comforting to think of contrast. Oftentimes, we think of ourselves as a minority against the world.
Yeah.
But the more I thought about what we talked about tonight, I never really thought of the fact that in the world, it's so fragmented because everyone becomes their center of truth. So there isn't really unity in the world, right?
Yeah.
And that's why God's kingdom growing. You don't look at it so much by numbers of people, but if you think about the kingdom as a united group of people around God's truth, that doesn't exist anywhere. Because in the world, it's all fragmented.
Yeah. And again, they think they are so, you know, wise and brilliant. What happened during the judges? Every man what? Did that which is right in his own eyes. Is that just moral relativism? How'd that work out for the nation when the judges were there and the people had that mindset? It says there's no king in Israel. Not only was there no political king, there was no spiritual king. And that was the real problem. And so we're having a lot of chaos today, a lot of violence, a lot of craziness going on, a lot of anger. So much of that comes, I think, from just some sort of groupthink where everything is this life because you don't really believe in the next one. Yes, Jonathan. Well, especially, we had the privilege recently of doing a tour of the Boeing plant. Wow, what an impressive place. And how they come up with these new ideas about these new designs, and that's sort of what puts them above their competition. Is I didn't realize that they don't build many of the parts themselves. They come up with the idea, they design them, and then they collaborate people all over the world, Italy and Japan and China. All these parts come from all over the world, and they assemble them. They get their idea, and then they make them work. But they have to work based upon what's aerodynamic principles, right? I mean, you can't just say, well, I think this. If it doesn't fly, it doesn't fly. And so it's sad that we tend to have a two-tier system. It's kind of like in those kind of areas, we understand it's got to be just so, or it's not going to fly, for example. But in matters of religion, it's like anything matters. Anything goes. Because they act like there isn't a truth you're seeking for, and the truth is what saves you. It's just kind of gives you your own truth because it's based upon what you feel. And so that makes it difficult for those of us who believe in the truth and are trying to abide by it. Yes?
You know, I've always told people this. If you don't believe the Bible, then you can believe anything else, and where does it stop? It never stops. It just goes on for new ideas, new beliefs, new thought patterns. Find the Bible to be complete, and I don't see a reason to go beyond what's in the Bible. But there's people out there, there's religious organizations that, well, it's not in the Bible, so I can do it, you know, kind of thing, you know. And that's, it's hard to see where it would stop. It won't, and it just keeps going on.
Yeah. Doesn't the Bible say we're complete, thoroughly furnished to every good work?
Right.
And if you believe that, there's great peace of mind to knowing you don't need to go beyond. And what a blessing that is to know you're on the right path and you got the light and you can walk with confidence instead of constantly wondering, and everything becomes some sort of, you know, experiment. I mean, either it's true or it's not true that Jesus Christ was a historical figure who came and lived and died and was resurrected from the dead and then ascended up into heaven. And there's lots of historical evidence and a corroboration of witnesses to back that up. And people have to look at that evidence and they have to decide, is that true? And if so, that changes everything. And I think it's important, even for those of us that were sort of raised in a good Christian home and obeyed the gospel at a very young life, a very young age, to really make sure we just don't sort of blindly accept what we've been told, but that we really assess what the evidence is and be reaffirmed that, yes, this is beyond a reasonable doubt the most reasonable conclusion given the evidence. And some of this book that I've been reading, I told you about, there's just more and more scientific evidence where the scientists themselves, even though most of them are atheists, are admitting that there's just all these discoveries that are demonstrating that there was a beginning and there's going to be an end. And it's not some sort of endless system that just sort of goes in and out and we just happen to be a part of the universe, which is eternity. And so even science is beginning to show how complex life is, how complex the universe is. It's pretty hard to believe more and more for scientists to believe that even if you had billions of years for this to happen, that this all could have come about by chance. And so what's becoming very popular for them to make the odds better that all of this complexity could have come about by chance. But you know what they're coming up with now? Heard of the multiverse? Absolutely no evidence for some sort of parallel universe, and then one parallel after that, and one parallel after that. But if there are billions and billions of parallel universes, and we just happen to be one of these billions and billions, then you can make the odds look better that all of this happened by chance. And that's supposed to be these best scientific minds. Where's the evidence for that? None. Except they've got to have some sort of paradigm they can look at to make their ridiculous theory mathematically look like it's even partially reasonable. So you look at this and it's just like, wow, regardless of the evidence, I'm just going to believe this other period. Yes, Gail. Yeah. In fact, Hawkins recently, when he was pressed on some of this stuff in a debate, I understand, said, well, you know, it is hard to explain this complicated DNA and how that could have just shown up. And so he said that maybe somebody from outer space came at some point that we don't know about, some extraterrestrial life, and put this DNA there. Oh, so you'd rather believe that some extraterrestrial ET did this rather than God, anything but God. And that doesn't really help anything. Where did that ET come from? And you still got the same issues ultimately when you look at other kinds of life, do you not? Yes, Jen.
I was just gonna say that it always bothers me that people put more faith in science because that's just applied theory. Science is changing constantly. I mean, wasn't it just recently when Pluto got downgraded to a planet?
Yep. Yeah, and frequently wrong. I mean, back in the 50s, science assured everybody asbestos is perfectly safe, until it wasn't. I mean, there's just so many different areas where they're so sure. Yeah, you know, and they found out later about smoking. So they're finding new things. So much of this is an interpretation of data. And, you know, you can have a theist who looks at the fossil data, and it seems pretty clear that this fits flood geology, but somebody else who doesn't want to believe in that interprets it differently. And so, you know, just worshiping science, like you said, much of that is just worshiping the very laws that God himself put into place. So, yes, Les.
I thought something very interesting happened back in celebration of the Seattle World's Fair's 50th anniversary. And during the World's Fair, reporters went out to some elementary schools and they asked third graders, what's life going to be like in 50 years? And they came up with a whole kind of wow. There was one of the third graders said, I think I'll carry a phone in my pocket. That was the only thing that came through in that 50 years. We're carrying phones in our pockets these days. And, you know, third graders not really that smart, you know, but things, you know, people want to believe these things, and we have the intelligence to trial and error to come up with new technology, new things like that. But it was probably there all along, you know. It really was. It's something that's had to put the microwaves together, I guess.
Well, and we marvel at like the Hubble telescope and all these different things. Well, how did they figure out how to do that? They examined the human eye and tried to do the best they could to use that technology to apply it. So it was God's design that they were able to use. All right, anybody else? Yes.
Once on one of the radio talk shows, you know, when the whale was carrying her calf.
Oh, yes, that was a moving story. I would prefer to talk about human beings and what they do for one another than whales, but it applies to whales and their instinct as well. Yes, Jennifer.
Well, I just think we're so blessed that we have the truth and that there's people out
Now, George Orwell said, in an age of universal deceit, telling the truth is revolutionary. And we have more and more a revolutionary truth, right? Yeah. That so many people around us don't understand. And somehow or other, we have to get the word out. So thank you for your feedback and your comment. I really appreciate it. Depending on when the books do come in, we'll eventually talk about heaven. But I hope this was meaningful tonight. So we'll either do. Go ahead. It's this idea that there's no truth, that it's just what you think it is, moral relativism. We're in the age of postmodernism. Well, it's what we're in now. It's what sociologists and all that would define as what is the mantra of the day. So you weren't born into this era, but you've...